Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by Evil on CBS All Access, CBS.com, and on demand for the perfect binge fest, and by the podcast Detective Trap from Wonderly. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're downloading podcasts. Today on The Grave Talks, the Hanover haunting, Deanna Simpson story. Deanna Simpson thought she was about to embark on a fresh new chapter in her life. Little did she know that next chapter would be titled The Hanover Haunting. After finding what she believed was her dream home, she very quickly discovered that she had entered a nightmare. After a few strange incidents, a priest was brought in for a simple home blessing, only to have the priest storm out of the home, leaving burn marks on the floor. Deanna was locked in for a ride that would include strange and unexplained whispering late at night, doors slamming and opening on their own, unexplained shadows lurking down the hall, plagues of locusts descending on her home, and more. In desperation, Deanna reached out to anyone who would listen and offer a possible solution to her Hanover haunting nightmare. However, not everyone who wanted to capture evidence left them in a better position than when they entered the home. Fighting dark forces takes far more than just investigators who could prove that what she said was real. The demon still refused to leave her home. Today we learn of the Hanover haunting, the Deanna Simpson story, from Joni Mahan.
Well, what led me to the story was really fascinating because it was a series of synchronicities and just connections that probably wouldn't have happened otherwise. So Deanna Simpson has been going through this haunting for a number of years, for like 11 years. And she finally got to a point where she wanted to get it out and get the story out as a book, because it's been on several paranormal shows, but nobody has told the whole full story. So she initially was working with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and they had a contract for a year, and Rosemary just could not get to it. And so they kind of parted ways at that point. And then, you know, recently Rosemary died. So kind of a, you know, strange little synchronicity there, because she wouldn't have been able to finish the book anyways had she started it. But so Deanna started looking around, and she saw me on Facebook. We had been Facebook friends, and she started asking several of my other friends if they knew if I would do something like this. And the friend that she reached out to knew about my success with Bones in the Basement, the story about the S.K. Pierce haunted Victorian mansion. And this would be a fairly similar format, story about a haunted house and how the people escaped it. So she called me and reached out to me and asked me if I would be interested in doing this. And I thought, well, I mean, you know, it's a big book. When you go into something like this, it's not just writing the story, it's interviewing constantly. You know, I talk to Deanna 2-3 times a week, if not more. And so it's a lot of back and forth, and not just interviewing Deanna, but everybody else that had a role in this book. So it's been a lot of interview process, but I did say I'd do it. And I said, before I get started, I'd like to actually see your house and meet you in person. And it worked out that I was traveling back from a Paracon in Massachusetts back to Indiana, where I live, and Pennsylvania's one way to go. So she's a little bit further out of my way. She's down by Gettysburg. It's Hanover, Pennsylvania. But I drove down there anyways, and I felt like I knew the house was insanely haunted, like probably more haunted in a negative aspect than anything I'd ever encountered before. So I felt like I was fairly well protected. I was saying my prayers and surrounding myself with positive energy, and felt pretty confident that I was okay going in there. And I stepped foot over the doorway, and I couldn't have been more wrong. That place was insane. I couldn't stay there for very long. It was awful.
So this is Deanna's home that is haunted. That she's talking about. Now, what exactly, you know, prior to you setting foot there and having all of this overwhelming feeling, what did you know? What had she told you about her case and about what she had been experiencing?
Well, her story has been on several paranormal shows, including The Dead Files and My Haunted House. So I did watch those episodes just to get a little bit more background. And I was aware of the house, so you can't not be. It's a very distinctive little brick house in the middle of town that looks like anything but a haunted house. And so it really kind of drew my attention. And I knew about Fox News had gone out there to do a segment around Halloween, and one of the newscasters got attacked on film. So I knew the story. It was really difficult not to know about it. But prior to going in, I just knew that she had had a very difficult time and that she was still going through a difficult time with the haunting. And if nothing else, I wanted to write her book. But once I got there, writing the book became secondary to helping this woman get out of the situation. So that was kind of where I set my sights.
What was her goal in this? Did she want to get out of living in this home? Did she want the home to simply calm down? What was the ultimate goal here for her when you met her?
She wanted to get out of the house. She had been there for 11 years, and the haunting just kept getting worse and worse, and getting to the point where it was getting really deadly, to the point where she realized that what was there wanted her dead. And it was only a matter of time before that happened. So she wanted out, but every time she'd try to get out, something would happen. The house was underwater on their mortgage, and they would have lost a ton of money. Her husband was a disbeliever. He really didn't believe most of what she told him was happening to her. So she was alone in this for a number of years, and she really just wanted out. And she was kind of hoping that if we got her story out, the full story out on paper in a book, that it would somehow lead her to some kind of solution. Mm-hmm. And it did eventually.
Back to our story in just a moment. First, I want to thank our supporter today, one of them being Detective Trap from Wonderly. It's a brand new podcast, and it's pretty damn awesome. If you like this show, you're going to like this. Check it out. When three women disappear in Santa Ana, California without a trace, it takes someone special to find out what's going on and seek justice. An unwavering detective, one would say. Detective Jolisa Trapp has always wanted to be a cop. And she is. And she's not like the other cops. She's breaking barriers. She's the only woman on an otherwise all-male homicide squad. And she does her job in a rather unconventional way. This brand new podcast from Wonderly in the Los Angeles Times, Detective Trap, takes you into the life of a cop who conducts herself relentlessly. It's hosted by award-winning journalist Chris Gofford. Detective Trap is the story of a detective who fights through her own personal struggles and society's indifference to bring a serial killer to justice. She digs in and does not let go. Trap's strongest resource for catching dangerous criminals? It's personal experience, and damn, does she got it. While listening, be sure to subscribe to Detective Trap on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. You can also find the link in the episode notes. Detective Trap from Wonderly. Let's talk about what was going on in that house. And I know it has been documented on various shows and things of that nature.
Right.
Many of our audience, you know, probably have not seen them, though.
Right.
Let's talk about what some of those things chronologically that were going on in the house for her specifically that just slowly escalated. Let's start at the beginning there. What were some of those things that she was going through?
Well, she was very much drawn to the house in an unnatural way. It was exactly what they weren't looking for. So a lot of my story also is a love story because this was her third marriage, and she really finally met the man of her dreams, and she really wanted to have a happily ever after there, and that's what she saw this house would bring her. The house had other ideas. I really feel like it pulled her in from the very beginning. She was just adamant this was the only house she was interested in. And even though Tom expressed a lot of disinterest in it and brought up all the reasons why it wouldn't be a good house for them, she just wouldn't back down. And so they did finally buy the house. And she was elated for a couple days. And it was, you know, it was the first time they had really lived together. And they were like two kids getting started. But then weird things started happening. One of the first things that happened was even before they bought the house, she went in with her camera and was taking pictures of the rooms just to document it, to show her, you know, to show her family and everything, what she was looking at. And in a lot of the pictures, there were weird, strange light anomalies, sweeps of light through the pictures and orbs. And in one picture, there looked like a man was staring in through one of the windows. And she thought it was odd, but yeah, her husband said, oh, it's probably just the lights, or, you know, it's dust in the air or whatever. It's nothing to be worried about. But then once they got moved in, she spent a lot of time there by herself because her husband worked. He was a pharmacist. He still is. And he worked kind of sometimes odd hours. And she found that at night was especially when she would start feeling just off. Felt like somebody was watching her. She'd turn around and shadows would move really quickly. And, you know, first she was trying to make an explanation for it, like, oh, maybe a car drove by, or maybe it was, you know, me moving or something. And it just, it started just getting worse and worse. And one thing that happened was she brought her cat there, her older cat, and the cat immediately reacted to the house, was terrified, wouldn't come out from the closet, and just started getting sick. The cat just eventually withered away to the point where they had to put her to sleep because she came in the house thriving and ended up dead within a few months. But she didn't necessarily connect that with the haunting. And just weird things started happening. Like she was outside raking one day, and this old bent over woman with a three-legged dog came walking up. She just appeared out of nowhere and said, kind of had a witch's cackle. And she said, you know, a boy died in that basement, don't you? And Deanna went to put her rake down because she wanted to talk to the woman. And when she turned back around, the woman was gone. And she was right on a corner, so she could see a block in either way. And there was nowhere, that woman had just disappeared. So she just had a lot of really strange things in the beginning, but it wasn't anything that she would have attributed to a haunting. It was just odd.
Sure.
And then a month later, they started smelling really foul odors. Smelled like fecal urine and body odor all mixed together with cigar smoke. And it would just come on really strongly, and then it would disappear. And then they started seeing black mist moving in the corners even more profoundly than in the beginning. So it just started really slowly to the point where Deanna really thought she was going crazy, because every time she'd say something to Tom, he would say, oh, that's, you know, that he would try to find an explanation. And sometimes his rationalizations were more far-fetched than just saying this is a haunting. But she tried to buy into that until she just couldn't. She knew something was going on. But then, is it her mind? Is she crazy? She started Googling signs for schizophrenia. And yeah, she really thought she was imagining some of this stuff until it just got more and more profound as time went along.
And that's what I think most would do instead of jumping immediately to haunting, especially when you have these things that are somewhat suggestive, that are somewhat, well, yeah, it could be this, but, you know, it's much more likely maybe there is something going on with me and I should look into this. Back to our interview in just a moment. First, I need to thank the other supporter of our program today, Evil on CBS. All access, CBS.com or on demand for the perfect binge fest. It's a great show. It's just one of those that comes along and, you know, they don't come along super often where it's like, oh, this is dark. This is creepy. This is weird. This is great. That's how I feel about it. Check out Evil on CBS, All Access. It's a mystery with clues in every single episode that leads you up to the chilling season finale. Jump out of your seat, scares, stories, miracles, demonic possession, hauntings, and more. Katja Hervis plays Christian Bouchard, who's a forensic psychologist who's hired by a priest in training, played by Mike Coulter. Together, along with Asa Manvi, they investigate the Catholic Church's backlog of unexplained mysteries. But someone doesn't want them to go very far. Someone does not want them to find out what the hell is going on. The more they discover, the more dangerous it gets. Michael Emerson is the villain here. He doesn't hide in the shadows either. He's out just saying, uh-uh, you ain't going nowhere. Find out how far they get and what they find out. Evil, it's available on CBS All Access, CBS.com, and on demand for the perfect binge fest. So as time goes on and things continue to progress, is there a tipping point or an event that makes her say, okay, I know this is not me. I'm not having a mental break. I know this has confirmed to me that this in fact is something external from me. There's something going on with this new house that I'm living in.
Yeah, I think it kind of happened for her when her daughter Amber moved in. Amber was going to college and needed a place to stay. She'd been living with her dad, and she thought it would be great to move in with her mom and Tom. And Amber started having things happen to her as well. She stayed in the first floor bedroom, and Deanna and Tom had the second floor, which is kind of an attic that was converted into a master bedroom. And so down on the first floor, Amber would go to bed at night, and she just noticed her bedroom seemed so dark, even though there were windows and streetlights outside. Her bedroom was like black as pitch at night. So, and then she started hearing footsteps outside her door, and it creeped her out. She couldn't sleep in a room without the door shut, and she always slept facing the door because she was terrified something was going to come through. And then she started hearing strange noises. One morning she woke up and it sounded like somebody was slamming all the kitchen cabinets. And she got up and went in and looked, and all the cabinets were wide open. And her mother was still in bed asleep. So she went up and got her and said, Mom, you know, you got to come see this. And they came down. And I think, you know, Deanna having somebody else confirm what she had experienced really helped her understand that she was really not having this by herself. And her and Amber had several encounters together that really pushed both of them into the direction that this is definitely a haunting. One of them came, they went down to the basement to do laundry, and the basement was always just an eerie spot for Deanna. She just did not feel comfortable down there, but that was where the washer and dryer was. So she had to go down there. And even the cats, she ended up getting two new cats, and they refused to go down in the basement, and that's where their litter box was. They would make a mad dart down and then run back up. So there was definitely something weird going on in the basement. But she and Amber were doing laundry one day, and they were down there just chatting and talking and sorting laundry, and all of a sudden the lights went out, and it was just dark as it could be, and they couldn't see anything. And both of them kind of panicked a little bit because they were already uncomfortable being down in that basement. So they finally found their way up to the top of the stairs and realized that the power had not gone out. The lights had simply been turned off on them in the basement. So they flipped the switch back on and everything was fine. And that wasn't even the beginning. That was just the beginning. More and more stuff kept happening. To the point where Amber finally said, I've had enough. And she ended up moving out. Couldn't handle it anymore.
As this is all going on, now there's two people in the home that are experiencing a very real haunting. There's very unexplained things that are occurring. How is her husband handling any of this with now two people saying, there's some weird things going on here?
He still denied it. He denied it for several years. For a lot of people, I think that this disturbs them greatly because it goes against maybe their belief system and their religion. And, you know, when people die, they're not supposed to hang around. They're supposed to go to heaven. That's what we're taught in church. And I think he really, for him to grasp onto the concept that it might be paranormal also meant he had to defy all of his religious beliefs. And It was difficult for him. He needed to be the protector of the house, and he couldn't protect them against something he couldn't see. So it was easier for him to try to explain it away, to try to bring them some comfort. You know, I think he wasn't malicious about it. Tom's a great guy, he's a sweetheart. But I think he really wanted to try to explain it away, both for himself and for Deanna. He didn't want her to be afraid. So if he found a logical explanation for it, then he felt that was part of his role as protector.
Sure. And that's understandable. A lot of times when someone's in that role in that place, it's an inadvertent hurt that they're causing to the others because they think if they can find the solution, if they can provide the answer to these problems, well, then it's not a problem anymore. But when that person truly does not have the answer, almost for, I'm guessing, Deanna, it almost feels like you're being ignored because no one is recognizing the fact that these things are, in fact, going on.
Exactly. And I think the ghost in the house did this on purpose. I really feel like they selected Deanna because she was a victim of abuse from her first two marriages. She was very vulnerable. And the house really was looking for somebody they could mold and torment. And picking them, Tom was a skeptic and he was always going to deny it. So Deanna was really going through this by herself. Even though she was living in the house with her husband, she really was isolated, and that made it even worse for her. She just had, you know, and what I've told you so far is just the tip of the iceberg. It just started getting progressively worse and worse and worse, you know, until she was terrified.
And as things did continue to get worse, what did she do to try and cope with what was happening?
Well, the first thing she did was, and this was before her daughter moved out, was there was a church right across the street. So she walked over and talked to the minister there, which was an older woman. She's a very nice woman. She said, oh, yeah, I'd love to come do it. She didn't tell her about the haunting because she was concerned that the woman would think she was crazy or wouldn't believe. So she just asked her if she'd come over and do a house blessing, that they just moved in and they just wanted to feel comfortable in the house. And the woman said, absolutely, no problem. And it took a little while to get the woman to come over. She kept canceling, and then she'd reschedule and cancel and reschedule. And then finally, the morning of the house blessing, Deanna looks out and she sees the minister coming out of the church. And behind her are six of her deacons. So they came as a pack of people. And they came in, and they were very nice at first. And at that point, Deanna and Tom weren't married yet. They got married after a year being in the house. So she went to introduce the minister to Tom, and she said, oh, this must be your husband. And she goes, oh, no, we're not actually married yet. And the woman's entire demeanor changed on a dime. She became very hostile and started yelling at them that they were fornicators and they were against God's law, and this they were bringing bad things onto themselves, and they would never be happy and living in sin. And the woman, like, literally stormed out of the house. And it was just such a contrast between how she was when she walked in and how she was when she left. And as she left, Deanna caught a really strong scent of burning wood, and she looked down where the minister had been standing in the doorway. There was the wood was burnt in the shape of a footprint, like charred black. And the minister stormed out and left, and Deanna and Tom were just staying there with their mouths hanging open because they had been nothing but nice. And then she found out a couple weeks later, the minister had a freak accident. She had been they had a church carnival out in the parking lot of the church, and the minister fell or something and hurt herself to the point where she was in a wheelchair, and she never returned back to the church as a minister. So Deanna always wondered, you know, if it was the house that got to her or what happened, but it was a really strange encounter. So, I mean, as soon as that happened, it was like, what do we do now? Because, you know, obviously the minister didn't help. So they went to plan B.
Was the thought, I mean, especially retrospectively looking back on it, was that in fact the personality of that minister? Would that minister have had that same reaction in any other house? I mean, I do understand where a church is going to say, well, you know, we don't necessarily agree with this, but for them to have that kind of a reaction, you know, almost just like so strongly negative, so strongly adverse, that doesn't seem to be the personality that I think a lot of churches would have. It almost sounds like maybe did something take over that minister, especially did that minister know something going in with all of the deacons coming out and all the kind of skirting around getting to the house? Was there something that they knew might be in that property?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. And Deanna has done a lot of soul searching afterwards, and she thinks maybe something in the house got to the woman when she came in. I mean, they obviously didn't want her. The ghost in the house did not want her there. They didn't want to be extracted. You know, maybe they knew that she couldn't even, she wasn't strong enough to even do that. But they were going to torment her just like they were tormenting Deanna. So I think, you know, in retrospect, I mean, we kind of think probably the ghost of the house got to the minister while she was there.
So they have the minister come out. It didn't obviously go very well. And now they're kind of sitting at a loss. What do you do at this point? They went to the people that they would trust for their spiritual needs and for hopefully some resolution here or whatever it may be to calm the house down. What options does she have? What does she feel she can do next?
Well, her next step was to, she talked about it at work a little bit with one of her friends, and the friend said, well, I know somebody that's a paranormal investigator. They have a team. Why don't I give you their number? And Deanna really was not involved in the paranormal world at all. She didn't watch the ghost shows. She didn't know anything about it. It just had never been part of her world. And so she called this team, and they came out, and they walked around, and it was obvious they were, well, I mean, they were probably more of a newer team. It was the people that showed up were nothing like what she expected. Like, you know, they didn't wear the black shirts and have all the fancy equipment. It was like a middle-aged couple, and they brought two Reiki masters and a medium with them. And they walked around, and they definitely confirmed that there was a haunting, and they got a few EVPs. Then they walked around and did a blessing. They said prayers in every room and burned sage and splashed holy water on everything and declared that they said, oh, the ghosts here are friendly. They said, there's a child here and he just wants you to be his mother. You should be thankful that you have them here. Offer them a place at your table. And it was just so odd. And Deanna's like, you know, no. I mean, as they're telling her, she's thinking, this is really weird, you know, and she thought maybe I'm going about it wrong. But, you know, Tom was there for it as well. And he said that was just really strange. So after they left, the house got more hostile. It was like every time she would have anybody in to try to help her, that she would get it back in spades by the house.
Where it felt like things were starting to get more hostile. Describe that. What went on as this continues to ramp up after every attempt at a solution is made, but doesn't really come through with a true solution or answer?
Well, directly after that incident, not long after it anyways, Deanna was in the bathroom brushing her teeth for getting ready for bed. And as she was leaving the bathroom, she smelled a really strong scent of blood. And she looked down, and there was blood all over the bathroom floor, just covered all over the bathroom floor. And at first, she thought she was hemorrhaging or something. So she yelled for her husband to come. And when he came in, they both looked down, and there was nothing on the floor. So they just would get to her in ways, and it made her look foolish in front of her husband. He's like, well, I don't see any blood. What are you talking about? Then not long after that, they started hearing, they'd be in bed, and they'd hear children running on the roof. They could hear the footsteps, and they could hear the kids giggling. And then they started hearing gunshots, like, echoing through the house, and so loud that it would rattle the windows. And Tom would say, oh, that must be a car backfiring, or, you know, or it's a squirrel in the attic, or, you know, causing the footstep sounds. And they've started arguing about it. She's finally said, I just don't want to be here anymore. And he said, well, this was your dream house. You know, we're staying here. We're now, the housing market dropped shortly after, it was 2007, right during that housing boom and then fall. And so the house was worth so much less than what they still owed on it that he didn't want to take the chance of leaving. So, and, you know, it just started escalating. She started hearing her name being whispered, and she started hearing touches. Something pushed her as she was walking through the house. It pushed her so hard she landed on her knees, and it just kept getting worse and worse.
As things are getting worse and worse, and obviously she's experiencing these things, and then her husband is trying to find logic, trying to find reason and answers as to what is going on, and feeling the frustration of this is a home that maybe he necessarily didn't think and it was going to be a great idea, a great place for them, and did give reason for, but eventually gave in, and they did settle there. He's feeling frustration. Their relationship sounds like it was getting rough, just with all of that tension. How are they feeling about things going forward? Is she at this point thinking, I mean, what is she thinking of what she's going to do?
Well, she was so caught in that space of making this third marriage work that she put up with a lot. And just went along with him, or maybe didn't go along with him. They would fight quite a bit about it, but, you know, what is she going to do? It took several years before Tom finally had an encounter that happened to him that he latched onto and realized that the house was indeed haunted. But before that, I mean, they had a swarm of locusts swarming their house in a cyclone. One of the neighbors texted them and said, you need to go outside and look what's going on. And there was a crowd of people out there, and they get outside and there are just thousands of locusts in a cyclone just around their house. That's it. And the minute she stepped off the property to see it, it circled up and went straight up into the sky and disappeared. So, and he still didn't even believe the haunting when that happened. It took him actually seeing the ghost before he realized that what she was going through was accurate.
Oh. Something like that witnessed by multiple people in the area. I mean, it's one thing if it's, oh, there's a lot of locusts out there, but they would typically then be on all the homes and all of the area, not just selecting one house and then flying into the sky. What was his tipping point? What was the experience that he had that made him realize there, in fact, was something going on with that property?
Well, they were sitting in the living room watching TV one night, and all of a sudden their cats sat up at attention with the hair on the back of their neck up, and one of the cats started growling, and it was staring at the basement door. And so she looks up and she, you know, talks to the cats, you know, what's the matter? What are you looking at? And her husband looks up too. And all of a sudden they see this curl of black mist coming up from under the door. And it curled up the door almost like it was shaped like an eel. And wings kind of expanded from the side of it and started flapping. And it curled up to the ceiling and then went around the corner and into the kitchen. And they both saw it. They were just dumbfounded that what they were seeing, and they followed it into the kitchen, and then it turned into like a cyclone, like a tornado. But it was in slow motion, and every once in a while they'd see an arm coming out of it, and then it went up into the ceiling. And as it went through the ceiling, they heard this loud sound. It was like a combination of a lion's growl and a witch's cackle and a baby crying. And then they saw arms come out like they were trying to grab onto the ceiling so they didn't get sucked through. And then it went all the way up into the ceiling and disappeared. And even weeks after that, there was a dark spot on the ceiling, and she kept painting over it and trying to make go away, scrubbing it. And it would just kept coming back. And sometimes it would come back in a different shape than it started off. But that was the tipping point. That was when he saw the ghost with his own eyes and knew there was nothing else that you could not explain that away as anything other than what it really was.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Joni Mahan about the Hanover Haunting. In part two, available to gravekeepers only, what was the history of the property that Deanna's home sits on? What was the shocking dream that Deanna had after a spiritual warrior left the home proclaiming the ghosts were gone? Can anything be done to remove the spirits that haunt a home when the property has such dark history? How did the spirit of a murderer follow her home late one night?
after a walk in the cemetery. What happened when Deanna was pinned to the bed by a dark spirit? And how can someone escape a dark haunting if they can't seem to remove the demon? We'll talk about those issues and more with Joni Mahan as we discuss the Hanover Haunting, the Deanna Simpson story. If you want to hear part two, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks to access part two of this interview and all of our interviews. They're all there for you for only $5 a month at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.